mundo la antorcha olímpica, se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur, Denijir Jilamujian, para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a un atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
They told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
I got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
To This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28, 2021. The government of Nicaragua is aiming to shut down the country's oldest LGBTQ advocacy group. The Interior Ministry has asked the National Assembly to annul the legal nonprofit status of Fundacion Xaquiquetzal and 14 other non-governmental organizations. President.
So, coming now, the Bathrop Spears Broadsides show for June 2nd, 2022. This is a flashback show, and we're going to be going to the May 10th, 2001 show, which you can also find in full on the archives under an archive of the earlier shows on the Huff website. In case you want to review other shows around that time, also, that's where you can go. This has the discussion of the current status at that time, 21 years ago, of the sleeping ban. Frankly, it doesn't look like we're going to be in much better shape for the majority of homeless folks in Santa Cruz, but a minority will have the opportunity of getting into controlled programs that treat them like minors incompetent individuals, which is unfortunately the standard approach to homeless folks, a way of avoiding social responsibility for the economic conditions that have created homelessness largely, and regarding them instead as medical problems or behavioral problems or unwilling and rebellious, service-resistant problems, that sort of thing. Anyway, there's also going to be a report on activist James Ney, accused of chalking peace and other kinds of slogans on the sidewalk as part of a protest. Jen Curry takes up a lot of the show. She's an individual who was biking on Pacific Avenue and was assaulted, by her account, by Officer Lauren Butchie Sticky Fingers Baker, as we used to call him, on January 19th of 2001, and there are various call-ins supporting her, giving further accounts. It was the same day that Baker apparently also went after biker Sean Duncan, who was part of a anti-Bush protest on Inauguration Day in that year. There's a John Earth interview from April 5th of 2001. We also have Catnip Kate Wells, the attorney and activist, who is trying to represent James Ney, but giving a gloomy assessment of his chances in court to file a civil lawsuit to allege false arrest because of the Atwater case, which, as well as a new legislative definition of defacing the sidewalk that happened relatively recently, I guess, at that time. There's a San Francisco attack on food now bombs up in San Francisco with the removal of benches at Civic Center Plaza in front of the mayor's office and in that parked area. I discuss the bad new drug czar, John Water, who is coming in. That's either Water or Walter. I'm not sure which. And we have Judith calling in on the El Centro Mercy Charities deal. And James Costner accused of, well, admittedly, smashing the Christopher Columbus statue in San Jose in front of the, I guess, City Hall or the mayor's office. He's a premature statue remover, and he got punished for it. He's awaiting a bail reduction hearing, and there's more. So tune in and check it out. And back on Sunday with probably a more current show. So you'll have to wait till then for that. But in the meantime, check out the past and see if you think anything's changed, gotten worse, gotten better, and let it encourage you to take the actions necessary to make those changes in the right direction. I should say in the left direction.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star, and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And it's time for another 2 hours of Civil Rights on the Streets with your host, Bathurst Peer Robert Norse. That's me. Hey, stay with us on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, your door on reality. Yet again to another edition of the infamous Bathrop Spears Broadsides. 2 hours of shit-kicking talk, and more talk, and hopefully talk leads to action. We have a number of things we're going to be talking about today. Some of the old favorites, no doubt, will come rolling down the pike, like the current status of the sleeping ban, the drug war, the plight of people on the streets and on the sidewalks and what's happening to them, and, of course, the ever-present specter of police abuse and police brutality, which seems to be, unfortunately, more present now than it ever was. I was just in court today. I went down to check out the case of old James Ney. That's the man who faces charges for chalking in the sleeping ban, or like slogans, on the sidewalk a year ago in a very good organizing job where he brought dozens of young people and street people to city council to challenge them and eventually get them to put the sleeping ban on the agenda, or I should say rather the safe sleeping zones, because those were put on the agenda finally by Mayor Keith Sugar after a fast and a protest with many, many people at city council, a pie in the Pusser Award, a waiting for Sugar sort of lobby-in in the city council chambers that we repeated last December, calling it the city council coffee clatch and tag team teach-in, and got enjoined, TRO'd, court-ordered out, and are facing a hearing on May 29th on that issue, for those who are interested, where we will go toe-to-toe with Mayor Tim O'Green's Where Have Thou Gone, Fitzmaurice. He's a Green Party member who apparently has abandoned the Green Party platform, at least on the sleeping ban issue, since the Green Party platform says no sleeping bans, but Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice supports a law that criminalizes the homeless, $54 fine every night that you are ticketed for sleeping either in a vehicle or outside in a city that has shelter space for 28, counted emergency shelter space for 28 people, population of 1 to 2,000, as I said before. All of this many of you regular listeners know already, or at least you've heard already from my voice. Maybe you don't believe me. You can check it out with the Homeless Services Center. You can check it out with the chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force. You can check it out with Mike Schmidt's Monday Morning Group. Meets every Monday, 8 o'clock in the morning at the Homeless Services Center Dining Hall Bay. So all these groups are meeting. I should say that group is meeting. I have plenty of criticism of the rather low-key, slow-go, essentially succumbing to city council's blandishments approach used by the Monday Morning Group. But rather than ramble all over the place, I'll just, what will I do? I'll ramble over the place anyway. That's, I guess, what I usually do. Call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can be on the air. You can talk about what you want. I will try to focus your attention on issues of poverty, homelessness, and civil rights for people on the streets. And today in the studio, we will, of course, be talking to our special guest who will be putting out an appeal. You may remember Jen Curry. Jen was a woman who was a victim of Sergeant Butchie Baker, who stopped her for going the wrong way on a bicycle up Pacific Avenue on June 19th, the day before Butchie Baker did a repeat performance by, January, thank you very much, January 19th, and then did a repeat performance on January 20th, the day of Bush inaugural. His fraudulency took office, you may remember. His fraudulency is now our Führer, our president, if you will. We had a lot of people who were marching to the town clock to protest that. Some of them were on bikes, and a guy plowed into biker Sean Duncan, and Butchie Baker, apparently, who oversaw the scene, gave the biker a ticket and let the hit-and-run driver go. I mean, it was amazing. And that case was chronicled in the Metro Santa Cruz, for those who followed that story. But I was very concerned about the case of Jen Curry, because a number of people called me that day. I was able to get interviews with a couple of the witnesses, and I hope I can find them, because I happened to run into Jen today in court. She was appearing on the citation she'd gotten, and she's a little bit chary of talking about it because it is still in the legal process. And I have urged her to say, forget it, just talk about it anyway, but she will probably be more prudent than I advise, since it's not my assets at stake here. Let's just introduce Jen just to our little chatter. How you doing there, Jen?
Oh, I'm okay.
Are you still okay in spite of this nerve-wracking mic that's sitting in front of you there?
I'll survive.
Well, you've had some dramatic training, right, yourself? You were telling me beforehand.
Oh, no, I was just a kid who you couldn't keep off the stage. So I'm just naturally...
You're a show-off.
Well...
You're an exhibitionist, let's admit it.
No!
No?
Only if under direction and with a script.
Why are you taking off your sweater? Wait a minute, put that back on again.
Only if under direction and with a script.
Well, and of course...
So, call my agent. Because I'm looking to get back in.
Well,
Apparently, we should have given
that. I forgot. I don't have an agent. Yeah. What?
We could get you an agent. Who knows? Maybe after this whole thing, and you get your $500,000 settlement from Butchie Baker and the Santa Cruz Police Department.
Ha ha ha!
You may be able to go actually form your own stage, maybe your own production company. Actually, there was a $500,000 settlement given to a man in Scotts Valley who was attacked by Deputy Todd Liberty, and we recently saw this at a forum. Where a film called To Serve and Protect, a UCSC student film on police abuse, was shown, and that's part of our kind of sleeping band program. You can get big amounts of money if you're lucky. Of course, they were lucky enough to have a videotape, and I don't think anybody videotaped your bust. I kind of gave a brief description. What happened to me was I got phone calls on the afternoon of January 19th that a woman was essentially assaulted by one or two police officers. It wasn't clear. I got different accounts from different people. And one of the officers involved was Sergeant Butchie Baker. And I actually was contacting Baker on another matter because Baker was the man who came to the city council coffee clutch several days before they enjoined us, told us to leave the city council offices, stay 50 yards away because we were menacing the mayor's administrative aide, Anna Brooks. Not true. We were, in fact, simply embarrassing the mayor, who is refusing to put the sleeping ban or any measures to decriminalize homelessness or deal with the shelter crisis on the winter agenda. But Butchie Baker came and took photos of us, and I tried to file a complaint with Butchie Baker about the behavior of Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, because Fitzmaurice, earlier that day, had been threatening activists and demanding they leave the office under sort of threat of uncertain behavior on his part. He was attempting to intimidate them out of public spaces. Now, I think that if anybody came over to you and told you, leave here, in a kind of a stern, threatening voice, that would be a form of assault. You would be put in danger in some way of your safety. Now, when the mayor does it, I think it's even more of an assault because he's using the color of law and the color of his office to act. So I told Butchie Baker, I said, Sergeant Baker, I'd like to file a complaint against Mayor Fitzmaurice. Well, he wouldn't take my complaint. And when I tried to get a copy of the report later, he refused to give me a copy of the report. So we are now subpoenaing that report from Butchie Baker. The subpoena was delivered yesterday, as well as subpoenas to Anna Brooks and her city attorney legal backer that you, OU taxpayers, are paying for, to the tune of about $10,000 so far. Is that right? Let me see how much money has been paid. That may be too much. Certainly several thousand dollars in terms of legal fees. I want to get a more exact account of that. I will be having on the line later tonight attorney Kate Wells, who will be talking perhaps about the coffee clutch case, but certainly about other cases like the Atwater case, which is that horrible Supreme Court decision that came down last week, 5-4, involving a soccer mom who didn't wear her seatbelt but got carted off to jail by a vicious Texas police officer with her children screaming and handcuffed, booked, because she simply spoke up to the police officer and tried to assert her rights. Now, I think there's some parallels here because Jen here in the studio, I think, did well. She was caught in the heinous act. Apparently, I don't want you to admit guilt, but who knows, of bicycling the wrong way on Pacific Avenue. Something that I think a number of listeners have probably had experience with before. Jen, are you a criminal bicyclist? You can admit it here in the studio. Go ahead.
Actually, I just. My business here at this station is to put out a call for anyone who saw what happened. Preferably if you actually witnessed the moment in which Sergeant Baker touched me, and if you possibly heard anything that he said prior to touching me or anything I said prior to him touching me. I'm looking for genuine witnesses who are above the age of 18, who are capable of showing up and testifying to the truth. And there's a lot of phrases getting thrown out, color of law. I don't care what color the law is. If it's in black and white and it's on paper and we all read English, then the law should be the same and interpretable for both law enforcement and citizens. And unfortunately, if there are police officers who are abusing the fact that they have a badge to do whatever they do, and which includes physically hurting citizens without what they say reasonable seizure, reasonable search and seizure, or whatever they're doing. It's unfortunate for police officers who'd like to go out and help old ladies cross the street and help little kids find their way home and keep too many people away from a burning building, or whatever police officers who are not you know, endangering citizens or denying them their rights due. My situation is pretty simple, and I don't want to get into any political rhetoric or anything else. Not even really happy that my name is out there, but I told it to a woman through the police car window, and I guess the next thing that happened was a couple people called your show and told my name and whatever. But all that aside, and I don't even think we should be saying the name of the police officer. The bottom line is, I was at the corner of Cathcart.
I do. Butchie Baker.
Cut it out.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
The bottom line is, I was at the corner of Cathcart and Pacific at approximately 1 p.m. I have a receipt from New Leaf that tells me exactly what time I left there with a couple of cold drinks. And
were you under the influence of cold drinks?
I was under the influence of Juice Squeeze, Crystal Geyser brand Juice Squeeze, uh-huh, in the Mountain Raspberry flavor, which, uh-huh, is my favorite.
You were intoxicated.
Or Wild Berry. It could be one or the other. I often switch between the two. And I think the other drink was an Odwalla. Either way. Okay.
You were high on juice.
So I bought a couple of cool drinks at the New Leaf because it was really hot out that day. And the only reason I was on my bike is because my car was at the clutch house. And that's why I didn't know if I had my date book with my driver's license with me, because he demanded my ID, and I said I didn't know if I had it. And he's like, well, do you have anything with your name in your backpack? I'm like, I don't know why, you know, whatever. So he's saying I had to identify myself. And we talked for a little while. I was trying to talk to him about an approach a police officer had that I thought was antithetical to their purpose. And I thought she had been unnecessarily rude to me when all I did was ask her what her project was. And
This was at the time that the Baker stopped.
This was before that, just like even not even maybe 15 minutes earlier.
So you had a conversation with some police officers prior to this incident, actually.
I'm not sure if she's a police officer. She's one of those people who walks up and down Pacific.
With a purple kind of outfit on. They're so-called hospitality people or hosts.
There was a community service officer in light blue. A community service officer.
Officer Hoy, perhaps.
Yeah, and she was taking pictures.
Of
people sitting on the sidewalk. And I wasn't sitting on the sidewalk.
Maybe it was for a photographic exhibit of some sort.
No, they were doing it to document how much, like, people block the sidewalk and in what ways they do it.
But you're not suggesting the police are trying to harass innocent individuals who happen to be sitting on the sidewalk.
Well, unfortunately, because it's just like the media. They can take pictures of whoever they want for whatever purpose that they want. And the media can, too. Which I don't like, because let's say I was a famous actress instead of a has-been.
yet to be, please.
Who knows? Maybe I'll have a new career again. But I wouldn't like it. I don't like it that somebody's allowed to take my picture without my permission.
It's one of the perils of being in a public space.
You
are vulnerable to that.
Right. You're vulnerable to that.
But so are the police. And folks, you can take their pictures at any time when you see them.
But you're
wrenching.
Not covered by their privilege or by the press's privilege unless you are able to certify that you're donating your photograph to
the
press.
Well, you can take pictures of anybody, police or non-police, in a public place, provided you don't use it for commercial purposes. You're on solid ground.
Yeah, if you don't make a penny off the picture, then you're okay.
So when you see somebody,
or you could approach the subject of your photograph and ask them to sign a model release in compensation of, let's say, a print or $100 or whatever.
If they're silly enough to do it, then you can use it to your heart's content. But if you see someone being wrenched off their bike or perhaps pulled in different directions by two different officers, as I understand happened to Jen here, although she may not be talking about that.
No, I'm not. Don't.
Hey, I, as a reporter, I have a right to report what I saw and what I heard in court today, and it's nothing against you. I mean, it's just hearsay.
You didn't hear anything in court today.
And the corridors of the courtroom, my ears
were
big.
It's days and days of not getting anything done until we've received copies of what they consider their evidence, and
it's
we provide to them
it
copies of what
It showed up in May, and
evidence.
The original charge, the original incident, was January 19th. That's
quite
a
while.
Well,
there's a reason for that. I had to... in the hospital in surgery when I was supposed to make my first
surgery. I understand. I know.
Stop it.
That was
no,
linked.
Stop.
Linked
you
to
stop
this
it.
Incident.
You have to stop it. Do you know why?
Tell me.
You're
why.
Tainting my witnesses.
Not at all.
Yes, you are.
Not necessarily.
Well, somebody needs to be able to call in and tell me what happened, and you have to tell me something that you didn't hear over the radio so far.
Well, they will give an account of their record, the fact that they may have heard
right,
another...
Right, but please don't feed anyone anything. I want people who actually remember what happened, because I couldn't find anybody. When I went back to the corner afterward, all the people I saw standing around refused to participate because many of them were homeless. At least some of them were under the age of 18. Some of them were from Canada or other places, and Some of them told me straight up, I'm a refugee, and I don't use my birth name or whatever. They were people who refused to be identified. They cannot be used as legitimate witnesses. And the problem here is I couldn't find anybody. And if anybody tried to find my first court date, they wouldn't have found me because it had been postponed due to my surgery.
We actually looked for you, Jen. As I said, there were two or three witnesses that did speak on the air about this issue, and hopefully you'll call back all you witnesses. I don't have your names right now. Again, this is an incident that happened in mid-January, Pacific Avenue. I guess it was closer to Cathcart and Pacific than to Lincoln and Pacific.
It was on the northeast corner of the intersection of Cathcart and Pacific. It was approximately 1 to 1:30 in the afternoon when the incident began, and that was a Friday, January 19th, and it was actually rather warm out. I was really impressed with how warm it was. And basically what the situation is I am hoping that people will call her. I hope you'll give the voicemail number as well as the on-air number for anyone who passes this information on to someone else who might have seen it. What I was told when I returned to the corner by people who would not offer themselves as witnesses was that there were approximately a half a dozen people, five or six people, standing around trading numbers, and they all left, and they didn't leave any of their information for me at the corner in any way. They didn't, like, nobody stayed behind or whatever to wait for me. I don't know if they knew I was
actually held in custody, by the way.
According to the police records, approximately an hour. If I look through, like, I save receipts and stuff like that, and if I check the time stamp on what time I went and picked up my car, I would say it was between 1 and 2 hours.
You are charged, this is public record, with a bicycle ticket for going the wrong way, and what is it? It's either resisting arrest or obstructing an officer?
I was charged with the infraction B21657, vehicle code, wrong way on a one-way street on my bike, and a misdemeanor 148A of the penal code, delaying an officer, which unfortunately...
In the performance of his duties.
Delaying an officer in the performance of his lawful duties. Right? The word lawful...
You can't forget to say that.
He has to be in the performance of his lawful duties or else you're not resisting.
It's his awful duties. You got to get that in mind.
Well, and I guess...
His awful booty. I'm not sure what he's up to. Frankly...
Well, whatever.
Sergeant Baker, if you're out there, call in and talk to us. We need some reassurance here that the law is in fact being enforced and that some renegade officers, possibly officers of the year or strange officers promoted to sergeant after nine women have accused you of sexual molestation, are not, shall we say, hijacking
the Santa Cruz Police Department. While in police custody. You forgot to say molestation while in police custody.
Right, that's true. At least those are the allegations of at least nine women in 1991 and 92, and Sergeant Baker was, in fact, the subject of an investigation by the city council at that time. The city council, under the pressure from the city manager, eliminated the investigation, and, of course, the police force's IA, the district attorney's office, and it was either the state attorney general or a local grand jury, exonerated Sergeant Baker, finding that all nine women must have lied, I suppose. And now of course, I'm not saying
right.
that
women
wasn't
who didn't
true.
Know,
I
women
don't
who
know
who didn't know each
nine
other,
women.
Women who didn't know each other, women who had never met before, never discussed any of this before, somehow independently came forth and accused this one police officer. Well, whatever.
Right.
So this gets into too much politics. Here's
he
the bottom
like
line.
Politics,
I hope to God somebody actually saw what happened, because I have no witnesses and I was about to plea bargain today.
All right.
Please save me from a plea bargain.
So, hi there. You're on free radio?
Am I on the air?
You are on the air.
Oh, I don't want to be on the air.
Okay, hang on. Okay. We have a caller who's reluctant to be on the air, so I'm going to talk to him off air. I want you to improvise a bit and talk about... Well, you were about to plea bargain. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, all I was going to say about that is, without any witnesses, the only evidence in the case is a tape recording that the officer made, which at best so far is missing the initial moment in which he contacted me, and I haven't been able to hear it all because we got a really crappy copy from the police officers and the DA's office. So. We are actually waiting at this point for a cleaned-up copy, which has always been in the police officer's possession, and the DA has always had access to it. And they have not provided the defense side with a good copy of the recording. Unfortunately, the recording is slanted by whatever it sounds like, and no one can tell from the recording what he's physically doing when, what I'm physically doing when. So again, at this point, it's my word against his,
and you are obviously a liar, and you're a woman of low repute. I mean, why else would you be on free radio to begin with? Ask yourself that question. Callers, ignore this woman.
Because I'm afraid of this guy so much that I didn't leaflet the corner. I was so afraid of what this officer did to me that I was afraid that if I made an overt search for witnesses prior to the conclusion of my case, if I didn't just somehow find witnesses prior to the conclusion of my case in criminal court here, that that I don't know. I was just afraid of him. I was afraid of the fact that he's a cop. He has power. He has protection. He has immunity. And the whole thing has been a nightmare for me. It was really physically painful. It's definitely been emotionally painful. I'm trying to separate that out and just say, okay, well, maybe I misinterpreted something, or maybe I missed hearing
him
say something.
Look, it was all your fault. When are you going to realize that? The police department does not make mistakes here in Santa Cruz. And if they do, they apologize.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, if he's capable of apologizing, then he's capable of admitting that this shouldn't have happened.
Let's not push it too far with Sergeant
Baker. Then they could drop the misdemeanor charge. I have no problem admitting I was riding my bike the wrong way on Pacific.
You are you are a criminal, and I don't want to hear any more excuses from you. 427-3772 is the number to call in if you want to nail this Khoury woman exactly and give her the many years in prison she deserves, or possibly throw a little truth on the situation and say what did happen
January 19th, 2001 at approximately 1 to 1:30 in the afternoon.
Right, between slightly up the street from New Leaf, I guess it was near Logo.
Blocks
Book.
South of New Leaf on the same side of the street. Right. I think it's before you even cross
it. It's what used to be Hippie Corner in that general area. And I know that there are a number of you out there who did see this incident because three of you called me up. And I'd like you to call up the station if you'd like, or you can give a call to, would you like to leave your number, or should I, let's do the Huff line. Give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
What's that number?
That's 423-4833, 423-HUFF. Got it?
1, 2, 3, Huff.
Yeah, huffing and puffing.
Is that the place I left a message for you today?
That's the place you may have tried to leave a message, but, there are so many hundreds of people trying to reach me all the time.
Right.
That you just have to, kind of wait your turn. Yeah.
Okay.
But don't wait your turn if you want to get on the air and actually blow the whistle on, police misconduct, or just talk to the woman who looked like she was being pulled in three different directions and was screaming, what am I being arrested for? And not apparently getting any kind of an answer. Not that I wish to feed anybody any lines. Those were the accounts I heard of it. I wasn't there. But if any of you were, or you know people who were, come on down. Because this kind of abusive behavior by Sergeant Baker or by any police officer toward, anybody, but a diminutive woman, and we're not talking about some wrestler here. You don't look like you're about to KO anybody with your physical size and strength.
I'm 5'3". I weigh 138 pounds.
And I haven't got a tape measure, but that seems to be quite apt to me. And I mean, bicyclists have been finding themselves victimized by a discriminatory perception or policy and practice by the police department. It became the subject of a discussion when money was being appropriated for more cops to go after bicyclists rather than, let's say, to deal with motorists who are running bicyclists off the road, or to acknowledge that bicyclists in Santa Cruz have a kind of a problem in terms of the way the laws are written, unlike in European cities where bicyclists have a somewhat more rational system of management in terms of their differential laws that treat bicyclists somewhat different than automobiles. After all, automobiles and bicyclists are distinct. There is a definite difference between a 2,000-pound car.
Car has a lot of protection around it.
Picture of car, picture of bike, there is definitely a difference between those two things. And our phone number here, in case you wish to add your voice to this increasingly monotonous monologue by me, is 427-3772. 427-3772. Jen Khoury, the woman who was reluctant to give her name, but did, and wants your help.
Let me just say this. I don't think it matters the identity of me or the identity of the officer. But if you saw it and you can describe it and it matches other people's description, guess what? I have corroborated witness testimony. That would be a really good thing.
Well, we have a caller here. Hi, caller.
Yeah, hey, what's up?
Well,
I know. I'm listening to the thing. I know what's up.
You've been listening. So what's up with you?
I ride bikes.
Uh-huh.
I ride a bike to work. I ride bikes for fun. You know, I like riding bikes. I don't even have a car, so I really don't care if gas is $3 a gallon or not. Uh-huh. I am not heavy enough to make, and I'm big. You know, I weigh 220. I can't make the light change. I got a ticket. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, I got a call coming in, too. But anyway, I got a ticket for waiting as the light changed like four times, and then finally I got and went through it because the light wouldn't change for me because I wasn't heavy enough.
Well, you got
now,
to
am I a pedestrian? Do I go over and hit the pedestrian thing and go through the sidewalk or what? So I had to cost me money and all this, and the judge didn't even want to hear it.
Which
so
judge?
You're right, we're not a car.
Which judge were you before?
I'm sorry.
No problem. What kind of a fine did they give you?
I got like 2 days of cleaning up at the yacht harbor and like $56.
Well,
you don't know why? Because my license
feel,
was under.
Hold it. Doesn't that make you feel proud to clean up at the yacht harbor?
Well, it's just a beautiful spot, and
yeah,
it was actually, if you're going to have to do public service, it's actually the way to go. But
I heard the TV station.
I have nothing bad to say about the kids that got at the yacht harbor.
I heard the TV station, the community access TV station, was the best place to do community service.
Well, there's a different place. Go
but
ahead.
Anyway, Robert, you're right. A bike is not a car. We have to do things, you know, like switching lanes and things like that. Sometimes we get caught out after dark and we don't have our light with us. You know, so what is it? It's just a reason for them to make their quota.
Right.
Well, there is,
you know,
one defense
of
you can have.
That they have to do for their, you know, little thing, and that shit has to stop.
There's a defense you can have, though. There's a real easy defense. Get off your bike and walk.
Okay, I turned my radio down. I turned my radio down, Miss, because I didn't, you know, because they always tell you to do that when you call in.
You can turn it up if you want.
I right. said you have a defense, which is you get off your bike and you walk, and you're a pedestrian, as long as you're not sitting on the bike.
Fuck them.
Yeah, right. You tell them, caller. See, we're talking with a non-biker. This is a sometime, part-time biker whose car.
I used to be a full-time biker. I used to be a full-time biker.
I'm a full-time biker, you know, and fuck them. You know, I have never killed a family of four people while I'm bike drunk.
Right.
You know what I mean? If I was on my bike drunk, which I have been,
yeah.
I've never heard of it. I don't even hit, you know, pedestrians. You know, you're like going through a crosswalk, you know? It's like, yo, you know, I'm on a bicycle. I ride this thing, you know, 70 hours a week, you know. I'm not going to hit you, little old lady going across the sidewalk. I know exactly where you are.
Now, have you been active at all in biker politics here in the Cruz? Or?
No, I haven't, Robert, but actually I know you, and you know me, but we'll get around that.
Okay.
But, no, I haven't.
Don't hold
and if
that
there is a, if there is some city council meetings or something like that I could sit in on.
Well, there's Pedal Power, and there's a number of other biker groups which, you know, they tried to, for example, modify this police grant that essentially produced more cops to ticket bicyclists.
Yeah.
And this was, you know, I mean...
But it's a...
Hello?
It's that quota thing, isn't it?
You're a popular guy. Everyone's calling you all of a sudden now that you're on the phone.
Actually, no, I think that...
No, I got someone down at the front door. I live in an apartment building. trying to weasel out of now that I called you to go down and answer the front door.
Well, I'm glad that this has moved you to, you know, to call in.
No, it just pisses me off, you know? I got one on my beach cruiser. I could, if I was going any slower, I would have fallen over.
Right.
For running a stop sign. That was like 2 years ago. On East Cliff at Pleasure Point, I was watching the surfers.
Right.
You know, checking out the waves.
Right.
And I cruised through that one there. I guess that's at about 40. No, it's not 41st. It's I don't know, 38th.
Something,
you know, by O'Neill's house.
Okay.
And I just kind of cruised through it. Yeah, because I'm looking at the waves. Seriously, if I was going any slower, I'd have fallen over.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whoa. You know, it's like what?
There you were. Well, the police officers are bored and cranky, and they need you to provide them with a little bit of, should we say, well, ticket material.
Well, unfortunately, I got a loud mouth, so that usually ends up me sitting in their damn back seat and while they run my ID, you know?
Uh-huh.
Well, anyway, Robert, I got to go hit the front door, but I'm listening to your program. I enjoy it, but you know what?
Pedal
Power is what I need to go to?
Well, perhaps. I mean, you can try them. You can also, there are other groups you can try, too. There's the... what's it called? The Bike Church, which has people who are, you know, involved in biking at different levels. The Yellow Bike Program was that one-time program where everybody was going to get free bikes and pass them around. I don't know what's happened to that. But the more you speak up on free radio...
Up in Mexico.
Yeah, well, hey, man, those are pretty high-profile bikes, man.
All right, listen, thank you for calling in. Call in again.
Okay, thank you, Robert. Have a good afternoon. Bye.
You too.
Okay, I'm getting nervous. No one's calling.
Yeah, this is a problem. You see, this woman is trying to take over my show, which I resent. Actually, it's great. I think that we're going to actually turn over the show to you, Jen, if you'd like to take it over for the next few months, because I am frankly getting very tired of this studio. The studio always looks the same. The walls are white. You know, the equipment is black. I mean, let's get some colors in here. Come on, folks. Anyway, call in to 427-3772, 427-3772. And while we're waiting for your calls, we're going to play a little bit of an interview with John Earth. That's a guy who used to be involved in Feed the People. That was Sean Alimi and John Earth's Feed 'Em Right downtown on Pacific Avenue, not actually half a block from where you yourself had your fine encounter with Sergeant Butchie Baker, Jen.
Okay, it's April 5th, 2001, 2:15. We're in Lulu Carpenter's talking over a cup of Java and a new street shit sheet with John Earth. Hi, John.
Hi, Robert.
And, John, you're, last we heard you were up to your old tricks trying to get food to the hungry. What kind of a ridiculous idea is this?
Well, I think it's something that's definitely needed in Santa Cruz. We all know that. And I'm hoping that we can expand the situation and eventually take care of all the people that need help.
Now, you and I just had a conversation where you suggested that, you know, candidly speaking, there's only the shell of a shelter system going in Santa Cruz. And yet you said you really didn't want to antagonize the folks in power by, let's say, going up to Mayor Fitzmaurice and saying, "Mayor, you know, I've been dealing with homeless people for a decade, and I got to tell you, things are pretty bad, and there's only a shell of a shelter system in Santa Cruz." And the reason that you wouldn't want to do that is what?
I think there's been a lot of polarization in Santa Cruz, and I think that's what a lot of the problem is. There is no good guys or bad guys in the situation. It's just a situation that needs to be corrected, and we definitely have a problem. I mean, we have a sleeping ban where people can't sleep outside legally, and at the same time, you don't have a year-round shelter, and the shelter facilities aren't enough to take care of all the people that need help. So I think it's time for all of us to start working together and stop the blame game, so to speak. And basically, that's the way I feel.
Well, you have the master of blame sheets in front of you, the street shit sheet. Have you looked this over, issue 163?
No, I've just gotten it a few minutes ago, so I haven't had a chance to read it over yet. But I know there's definitely a problem. There's no question about that. It's we need changes made in the system here. And we can't just all play the ostrich game and hide our heads in the sand and pretend we don't have a problem here, because we do.
Well, you feel that, and I know this may offend some city council members listening, but do you feel that the city council or the staff or homeless service providers are in some sense playing the ostrich game?
Yes, I think that's true.
I don't like to see you polarizing the issue this way. Or you might say that for homeless people at night, it's getting pretty polar already, if you know what I mean.
I think the problem is that what I'm saying is I don't want to point the finger at any particular individuals, but we have a situation that needs to be corrected. And I don't think a lot of the people in the area in Santa Cruz really know the true situation of a lot of what's going on with the homeless situation. A lot of people are under the misconception that the people basically are all being taken care of, and that's not really the case.
Well, I know that, just to let those folks who are new to your voice remember, or I should say learn, you have for years, particularly when Feed the People was active, fed homeless people in visible spots, both at City Hall, downtown, I guess at other places, with peanut butter, jelly, and love sandwiches with Sean Alimi in the old Manja operation before he died. And you are still, you're working with other people trying to evolve some other process. I guess you're working on an indoor process. I was earlier kind of scorning you for going away from the folks outside. But, you know, I mean, if folks will come inside, and they do, for example, for the St. Francis Soup Kitchen and to the Homeless Service Center, that certainly is a plus. How's it going with that?
Well, basically, One Mind Foundation at this point is still a startup operation, and we're virtually resource poor at this point. And
so send your checks, pennies, and dollars to the One Mind Foundation at
18035 China Grade Road, Boulder Creek, 95006.
Is there a phone number to call before they say to themselves, who is this con artist who wants me to send my dimes to you? They can call and check you out.
The number is 831-425-3202, and that's the message number, and I'll get back to them.
And just for the record, I don't think John is any kind of con artist. I think his heart is too soft and too big for that. But I'm going to try to school him on how to, shall we say, squeeze a few shekels out of this community. I mean, after all, if you're a dot-commer starting a new website, it seems you can get millions until the stock market crashes, of course. But if you're just trying to do something decent for the town, it's a little harder. Thank you, John, for speaking up again.
You're welcome, Robert. Thank you.
And that was John Earth talking about Feed the People. On the line with us now is attorney Catnip Kate Wells, sometime provider of medical marijuana until the city council essentially shut down the cannabis club. Nothing new on that front, Kate, I take it?
No. They've basically not allowing anybody to do it but Valerie.
That's Valerie Corral of Wham, of course. You, however, are also very much involved in civil rights cases, and in fact, that's where we all kind of ran into each other in court today. You were covering the case of James Nay, the cheeky chalker of Santa Cruz. And any update on that one?
The laws have changed in that area since the case came down, McKinney versus Nielsen in Berkeley. And unfortunately, it's as all of the laws are coming down, it's they have now said it's okay to simply deface property, and that could be with even something that doesn't leave any permanent mark.
By which you mean it is illegal to use washable chalk on the sidewalk. Kiddies, watch out.
That's right.
And, of course, with the new Atwater decision, which means that they can arrest your ass for an infraction, even if it wouldn't normally result in a jail sentence, even if you were convicted, they could use that to take you into custody if they wish, right?
Yeah, well, that was the next thing that I was going to talk about. He ends up not even having a false arrest case now because of this latest abomination to come down from the U.S. Supreme Court, written by Justice Souter.
Before you go into that, Kate, James Nay was, he and I and others were chalking on the sidewalk, simply basic slogans about the sleeping ban and the realities of that, how that affects homeless people. And I guess a person in Berkeley, several people in Berkeley, when they were chalking slogans on the sidewalk near People's Park in the early 90s, got, what, $25,000 damages because they were falsely arrested by the police for chalking. But now you're telling me 10 years later, suddenly there's a crackdown and it's, you don't have that alternative anymore. That's what you're telling us.
They've cleaned up the law and the law has been declared constitutional.
And the Constitution, of course, is now the compliments of Justice Rehnquist, right?
Well, he's our Chief Justice, but like I said, Justice Souter wrote this latest abomination.
So give us I talked about this decision about a week ago when it first came out somewhat with Richard Quigley on the line, but summarize the decision for us and tell us why it so dismays you.
Well, what it has done is basically take away any of our rights under the Fourth Amendment as regarding arrest. It's gutted the Fourth Amendment. And this is what I really want to tell anybody who's listening, because I'm trying to get this out to anybody and everybody. Basically, the situation is at this point that if you, for some reason, piss off an officer or he doesn't like you and you've committed some minor infraction, they can, under this latest decision and in comporting with the Fourth Amendment, they can take you into custody arrest, with all of the attendant ramifications, which include full body search, full search of your car or your vehicle or your backpack or whatever else.
And you get to pay the $20-$30 booking fee, right?
That is yet to be seen because we, as far as I know, we don't have any of those situations happening so far. Although they are well aware of the decision, the city of Santa Cruz has already served me with a copy of it in the Steve Argue case.
Now tell us how that, remind us of the Steve Argue case and how that will be affected by this decision, which says
I don't think it will be. I'm arguing that it won't be.
And the Argue case has to do with Steve trying to sell street newspapers and being taken down by Officer Grim Grip Garner, as I remember.
That's correct, and Malate together.
And CSO Malate, yes.
Right.
Go ahead.
And I don't think it will because we are saying that they had no probable cause to even detain him because there was an exception to this law that the officer evidently either wasn't aware of or was aware of and just decided he wanted to hassle me. So that's what makes that case different from the case in Texas that this abominable decision came from. The woman there was clearly not wearing a seatbelt.
But Steve Argue is properly selling a newspaper,
exactly.
A street paper, which is specifically exempted from the permit requirement, though I think they're playing games now with permits and licenses being two different things.
That he doesn't have to have a permit, but they have a license.
I see. Well, isn't that nice? Yeah.
So, their story changes every week. But at any rate, it's cops are talking to each other saying, well, he wasn't wearing a seatbelt, I mean, it's
you can't be too careful, Kate,
It's frightening, obviously.
Do you have a decision that you want to read us any parts of it that you think?
Oh, it's a very, very long decision, and I wouldn't want to read it. There's also another decision that's come down that's a little bit distressing that for all of those who are into jury nullification.
Explain what that is, Kate.
Jury nullification is if you do not believe that the law is just, that you then would not follow the law as a juror. This happens frequently in cases such as the trespass cases that come down about the people who are protesting the cutting down of the Virgin Redwoods and that sort of thing.
Marijuana, Vietnam
marijuana
War,
cases,
slavery.
Other cases where people feel that the law just isn't just.
Right. I know that in Massachusetts, it's been documented by historian Godfrey Lehman that slavery was not outlawed by legislative action or by constitutional action or even by the Civil War military action. Slavery ended in Massachusetts when jury after jury kept finding in favor of slaves who sued and or refused to convict them under the Fugitive Slave Law, one juror saying, we won't do this, and essentially nullifying the law. So that's a very important fourth branch of government or power that juries have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The case that arose before the California Supreme Court had to do with a case where the juror did not feel that there was an admitted act of sex between a 18-year-old boy and a 16-year-old girl, and they were going after him for statutory rape, and this juror, said flat out, I don't believe that that's fair law, and I'm not going to be able to enforce it. And this happened in the jury room, and the jury foreman reported it to the judge, and the judge gave him a little hearing in chambers, and when he was adamant about his position, they dismissed him from the jury. And then the defense appealed that decision to the judge, and the appellate court upheld the decision, and now the U.S., I mean not U.S., but the California Supreme Court also upheld.
So what that means is, be as specific as you can.
They have driven us underground, is what it means.
Tell us more.
If I can be as specific as possible, it means that if you're going to practice jury nullification, don't say it to anybody. Just do it. Right? I mean, you can still do it. You can still do it. Just say, hey, I'm voting not guilty. Period. And there's nothing they can do about that. And so that's the only way we can keep our right there. But the interesting thing is that jury nullification, I've done a little bit of a historical study on it. It originated in England when, in the old days in England, when the judge didn't like the decision.
They'd lock you in a room, man.
Well, yeah.
They'd take away your chamber pot, man.
Yeah, sometimes even torture you until you came up with the decision that they wanted. So that's why the jury nullification originally came about, and that's also why it's very important that we keep it. So another blow, you know, it's just, I'm afraid there are going to be many, many more blows in the future. You know, he's named his new drug czar. He's a conservative asshole who believes that anybody who does drugs should go to jail, who doesn't believe in medical marijuana. It's right back to where we were when Papa was in office, you know. Not that Clinton was our good friend there, but at any rate.
George Bush Sr.
Yeah, so...
it sounds like where it's worse than that during that time, because you at least couldn't be theoretically arrested for an infraction unless...
That's right.
I guess there's the argument if it was a continuing offense or you didn't identify yourself and they thought you were engaging in false identification.
And then they could only take you in to identify you. That's all they could do. They couldn't book you and put you in general population. Was the old law.
Well, there is still this process that Richard Quigley, the freedom fighter activist with the longest beard in town, and I talked about on the air the other day, take me to a magistrate, which he frankly thought you were responsible for installing in the county, that is, or helping to install. They haven't, I guess, set up the judges yet, but do you recommend people use this take me to a magistrate defense, which in essence says if somebody gives you an infraction vehicle code ticket, you say, wait a minute.
I'm going to give you a real legal answer, and I'm going to say it depends on the circumstances.
Oh, you are so slimy.
Yeah, well, it really
does. Slippery lawyer,
you. Because if you realize that if you do that, they can then rightfully take you under arrest to the magistrate. You have to leave your car, and if that might be in a situation where you would have to leave, I mean, they might have to tow your car. There are all kinds of reasons why you might not want to do it.
I see.
So I can't just categorically say do it every time.
Right.
You know, but
what are the advantages of doing it? Under what circumstances might you recommend someone?
Well, under a circumstance just like James Nave, who was arrested for chalking, you know, that would have taken care of it because they could have gone before the magistrate. The magistrate could have looked and seen that this wasn't anything they could arrest him for and could have let him go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so under those sorts of circumstances where you don't think that the cop had probable cause to even detain you in the first place, then that's the time you want to be taken in front of a magistrate where you can lay out your evidence and have, you know, purportedly an impartial magistrate determine whether or not there was probable cause.
Now, Kate, you've taken numerous cases in the Santa Cruz County area about of individuals who have been abused by police. We have in the studio Jen Curry, who I believe was abused by Sergeant Butchie Baker, based on the accounts I've heard. And, of course, I'm not a percipient witness, and I don't have access to every single witness that was there. But I guess Jen's going to talk about this a little more. She's already been speaking a bit about it, although she wants to be cautious, considering that she has a court case coming up.
We're talking about a police officer physically hurts people and doesn't...
Kay, actually, you're not on the air there. Jen thinks she's on the air, but she's not. Actually, the problem is Kate can't hear you because she's not at a radio, see?
Right.
So, but we'll have you talk in a moment. What I wanted to ask you, Kate, was you have currently a number of cases, and in fact, some rather violent cases of, for example, a Capitola police officer who is accused of engaging in some pretty unprofessional conduct that directly injured someone.
On a regular basis.
Now, are you prepared
not
to,
just once.
Right. Are you prepared to... Is the officer... have you filed suit against this officer? What's going on with this situation?
Not yet, but I do know that there are at least two lawsuits in the making right now, mine and one other.
Now, a little bird told me that this was Capitola Officer Murphy, and I don't want to say where I got that information from. you know, but I mean, I've heard that this man's name occur in a number of different contexts, and should Officer Murphy be listening in, I want him to have an opportunity to call in and provide his side of the baton, so to speak, you know, or his side of the pepper spray, and what exactly, although I don't know if Capitola Police use pepper spray, do you have any, I know Santa Cruz Police, they have been using pepper spray, I know the Santa Cruz Police have not in many cases been using pepper spray that I've heard about.
No, they just shoot.
Well, you got to shoot first, and then, you know, I mean, after all, as Laurie Andrus said, the baby's in the next room.
No, they don't use pepper spray. They just shoot.
Well, you also have the case of
Laurie Andrus.
I hope I'm not blasting you out. I'm so much louder than you are. I have a differential problem here.
Okay.
Laurie Andrus is the woman whose husband, Brian Andrus, was the was victimized by a home invasion by Sergeant Hennig, Officer Garazio, and I guess, what, two other officers back in 1998 in the spring because they were afraid that Brian was abusing Laurie, and even though Laurie said no and they had other means available they could have used to talk into the situation and she was visible from the window, they broke into the house and they sent Brian away, even though initially a jury did nullify and said, you know, several jurors said, we aren't convinced that Andrus attacked them back first and got shot in the back. It didn't seem too credible, you know.
They shot him twice in the back.
That was Sergeant Hennig's bullets, right?
Yeah.
And Sergeant Hennig, of course, is defending our city council now from people like myself. If you want to talk to Sergeant Hennig about it, just go to city council meeting every second and fourth Tuesday, and perhaps he can explain why his aim was so bad or why he shot back first or whatever ever happened there.
Well, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, every police force I know has a system of escalating violence. They just took out their guns and started shooting in this case. There were four of them, and there was one man, albeit, you know, Brian's a big guy, but there were four officers and one man with a baseball bat. And what did they do? They opened up fire in a small apartment with a small child sleeping.
And many kids playing in the neighborhood out front where
That's
the bullets
right.
ricocheted around.
Continued shooting at him outside where there were kids skateboarding.
Nor was there any investigation by the Citizens Police Review Board, which still hasn't responded to that complaint, and it's, what, 3 years later, or the City Council, or any kind of independent agency. I'm not even aware that an internal affairs investigation has been conducted, although I suppose one probably has at some level because, you know, there were complaints filed, which Chief Belcher first threw out. When Doug McGrath filed complaints against the officers involved, Chief Belcher said these were not serious enough to forward to the Citizens Police Review Board. And they didn't get forwarded. Not that the Citizens Police Review Board would have done anything but rubber stamp the police department anyway. So what eventually happened to Brian Andrus was, even though the first jury found he was not guilty, or not guilty, but not certainly guilty.
It was a hung jury.
It was a hung jury. What happened next, Kate?
What happened next is that the family was being torn to shreds. They were out of money. They had... Laurie had to quit her job in order to attend the trial. And basically, they offered him a deal for him to plead to two counts instead of four. And he took it and went to prison.
And he's spent, how much time did he spend there?
Oh, gosh, I don't even know, a year or more.
Now he's back in the area, or he's trying to, whether he has to commute to, what, Nevada or something?
Yeah, yeah. They won't let him move to where they own the home. So, yeah.
How about his wife? Is she he's pressing forward with her damages suit against the police department?
Oh yeah, the wife and the daughter. Hannah.
Yeah, that's right. That was, she was 1 year old. That she's at three or four now.
Yes, she's growing up. But you know, it was pretty traumatic to see her daddy shot, laying on the sidewalk, stark naked, bleeding, and they didn't even give him any first aid.
Well, any other cases coming up that you think that we should know about? Any bits of any encouragement given this grim decision that's just come down, the Atwater decision?
Well, I guess I'd ask you to tell me if there's anything encouraging that you hear about, because, boy,
I find
I'm at a loss for anything good happening.
One thing that encourages me is I see Jen Curry in the studio with earphones on at last, talking on the air a day after she was afraid to even come into Santa Cruz because knowing that Sergeant Butchie Baker was in town, because now she has some support from people here and she feels, if I'm not mistaken, that there's some point at least in discussing this. So I find that encouraging. And
well,
I think
that is definitely encouraging.
Oh, yeah.
That is definitely very encouraging. And I do agree with you that there's actually I think you're safer if you come out and you're open about your complaints, because then you've laid the groundwork. And I mean, you know, if anybody should be afraid all the time, I have lawsuits going against probably 25 sheriff's deputies and cops all over the state right now. More than that, probably 45 or 50.
Wow.
You know, so, I mean, I should be watching over my shoulder all the time, but, you know, I figure they're going to leave me alone.
You are a cantankerous creature, Catnip Kate.
Yeah.
We've been talking to Catnip Kate Wells, attorney for the... the put upon, the abused, the beaten, and the unbowed.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, thank you for being with us. Anything
no
you
problem.
Want to conclude
with? Good luck
with?
To you all out there, and don't commit any infractions.
Oh, one last thing. I understand you're also the attorney for the City Council Coffee Clatch, that group of scofflaws
yeah.
who have been harassing
yeah.
poor Mayor Fitzmaurice
yeah,
and his administrative aide.
Yeah, they're pretty hard to defend in any way, but I'm...
You did something recently. I guess yesterday there was some papers served. What was that about?
We served them with papers to bring certain documents.
Anna Brooks's psychiatric history, for instance.
Well, yeah, that's very relevant in terms of whether or not she's got any history of psychological problems.
Butchie Baker's secret police report that he won't let us see.
Right, yeah. yeah. Little things like that.
Yeah, well, this should be interesting, I guess, because on May 29th, you will be cross-examining Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice on the stand, won't you?
Yeah, it'll be fun. This will be the second time I get to cross-examine a mayor.
Really? Oh, that's right. You did that with Mayor Rotkin, didn't you?
yeah.
I remember that one. That was in the City Council. That was in the City Hall lockdown
that's
case.
That's right.
And that went to hung jury, didn't it? That
it
was
surely
another
did.
Jury nullification case.
It surely did.
Mike Rotkin tried to have people arrested for protesting boisterously but nonviolently against the sleeping ban, and he got rebuked by the jury for it.
Yep, he did.
Hey, and that was due to you and other attorneys who stepped in, as well as fine activists like Robert Norris, the great Robert Norris.
That's
let's not forget
right.
him.
Oh, yes.
All right.
Robert the Great.
Robert the Great.
or certainly, okay.
All right.
Good night, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And, well, we're back here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. And, Jen, your mic is live again. We kind of muzzled you for the last 20 minutes. But I know you wanted to talk about some stuff. But before you do, let me quickly announce 427-3772 is the call-in number here. If you wish to be a part of this discussion, have police abused you? On January 19th, did you see Jen Curry and officers involved in some, well, let's say noteworthy activity on Pacific Avenue around 1 o'clock in the afternoon? Or do you know anybody who has? If you did, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's my off-air number. Or if you want to talk about it on air, call here, 427-3772. Jen, you had some thoughts on this.
It's been a while. I didn't...
You were going to talk about the police report, I think, and there was some stuff that actually had already come out of the police report that you wanted to comment
on.
Oh,
yeah, the police report said something about me being in a conspiracy with bystanders and that, like, I staged it. I'm like, I went into shock reading that. I was like, what? Where did they get that? Anyway, so they seem to think that there were some people standing around who were, they said there were people standing around with tape recorders and they saw, quote, at least one camera, end quote. And if anybody knows who any of those people were standing around, or if I could actually get a hold of everybody who traded numbers that day, that would be great. So it was Friday, January 19th. It was around 1 to 1:30 in the afternoon on the northeast corner of Pacific and Cathcart. Quote, contacted, end quote, by Sergeant Baker regarding going the wrong way on my bike on Pacific. And at the point, he wanted me to get ID out for him, but I don't know how it didn't happen. So if anybody saw this and they can... they can corroborate my account. That's great. I'm not going to announce my account. But the bottom line is, if you saw what happened, you're very valuable.
427-3772, if you want to call in the air, or 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
Or maybe you heard your friend talking about having seen it. Try to remember who they are and get them to call. We have another court date in 2 weeks from today. And it would be really good if I could
When is that court date? That'll be on the...
It's the...
24th, is that right? Or the
I think it's
the 24th, really would be 2 weeks from today.
Yeah. It's the Thursday, May 24th. We'd like to be able to interview witnesses and make sure whether or not we would like you to come and testify.
Sure.
Which would be totally dependent on how much you saw, which part of it you saw, if you were able to hear the conversation.
And Free Radio wants to have you testify even if you didn't see everything that Jen thought you saw, but you saw something that the public should know about around the police department. Because we really have, I think, a serious problem with public accountability in the police department. There is no real citizen input. There is no real consequence to bad police behavior unless you sue and win. Unless you have an attorney ready to go.
And that doesn't affect the police officer.
And unless you believe in the tooth fairy, that also helps. So.
Wait, but the money doesn't come from the police officer who abused you. The money comes from the city. So you can't even win any suit against what that person did to you once, I guess they are under a huge blanket of immunity. So
it is true. It is one of those blankets, a big blue blanket, so to speak. Wish we had some blankets for the homeless and less blankets for the police.
Touché.
So a couple of stories from Free Radio's internet stuff. I actually don't have the latest update. In fact, the latest update came yesterday, but I'm going to read you a little story that caused some alarm for me. I'm an old one-time food not bomber. I haven't been doing much feeding of people for the last couple of years, but I salute people who do it, food not bombers who come out every, I guess, it's at least once a week, maybe twice or three times the number to call for food not bombs, which serves vegetarian cuisine at the town clock. I think it's 2 o'clock on Saturdays, although it's also partially... Sometimes they serve at San Lorenzo Park. You know, you should call 425-3345 to get the actual time and place. Pretty sure it's Saturday, and I think it's Wednesday. It could be Thursday. 425-3345 to get information on Food Not Bombs. Perhaps I may do that before the end of the show and actually give you an accurate reading of when Food Not Bombs serves. But last time that they went after Food Not Bombs in San Francisco briefly in 1999, I think it was 2000 actually, when Mayor Whitewash Willie Brown was running for re-election. But the sustained attacks against Food Not Bombs that happened in the late 80s and early 90s, when hundreds, literally hundreds of people were arrested for serving free food with no health difficulties, with no abusive behavior, just because the mayor didn't like the mayors. We're talking mayors Agnos, Mayor Jordan, and Mayor Brown did not want to see the public to see homeless people in front of City Hall and long soup lines. It was too embarrassing for him because, after all, it tended to cast some aspersions on his homeless prevention program. So he went after each of these mayors went after Food Not Bombs or allowed the police to do so. And the police are always eager to rein in people like Food Not Bombers who are really interested not just in feeding people but in getting people aware of their rights toward the police, aware of their rights to basic things like shelter, to being treated like human beings. This is stuff that the police prefer that you not put too much accent on. You know, I mean, it's okay if you're, you know, upper middle class, have a credit card, and keep your rights in the better neighborhoods, but the rest of the time, the rest of the world is theirs, and so don't mess with their world. That's, I believe, pretty much the police perspective on this issue, on this rights issue. And unfortunately, apparently that's also the position of the Supreme Court these days. Things are pretty bad, folks. We need to reclaim our liberties. But Food Not Bombs has, since the mid-60s, mid-90s, when I and others went to jail, I actually went to jail under a sentence. I served 3.5 weeks in San Francisco jail for violating a so-called court order against serving free food. Food Not Bombs is still under that same court order, and everybody's still serving the food. Nobody's getting arrested. And one of the reasons is because some of us went to jail, and because every day that we were in jail, people served free food on the steps of the jail, indicating to the police that it was a useless activity going after these lunatic Food Not Bombs people who just seem to have their... all they can think of are serving carrots. I mean, come on, what's wrong with these folks? Unfortunately, there was a recent report. I'm going to read it to you. As part of the latest wave of human rights abuses directed at poor and homeless people in San Francisco, Food Not Bombs had their 5:30 food serving to homeless people in UN Plaza disrupted by the SFPD, That's San Francisco Police Department. This is following the midnight removal of the plaza's benches Saturday, April 28th, in supposed official reaction, quote-unquote, to an investigative report on the Hearst Corporation's KRON that aired on the previous evening's news. The KRON newscast was slanted to portray all of UN Plaza's homeless residents as violent drug addicts. Subsequent Freedom of Information Act requests made by the Coalition on Homelessness revealed that Mayor Willie Brown's office has been planning the bench's removal since October 2000 in callous and cynical disregard of the valid needs and reasonable accommodations for disabled and senior citizens, homeless or not. We interrupt this news broadcast for your phone call.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Hola.
Oh, hola Juan, ¿cómo está?
Yo soy Ernesto.
Oh, discúlpeme. Alberto?
Ernesto.
Ernesto.
Martínez. Ernesto, sí.
Ernesto, we're talking to Ernesto Martínez.
Yeah. Quiero hablar de las capacitas.
You want to talk about... ¿Tú quieres hablar de qué?
De las capacitas.
Capartistas. ¿Qué cosa es?
En México. Chapa.
Oh, Zapatistas.
Sí.
You want to talk about the Zapatistas.
Yeah. When in México, and no, they want el presidente de la Chapa. Si me quieren hablar de eso, quiero hablar de eso. Quiero oír de eso también.
No puedo entender todo. I can't understand everything you're saying. Are you talking about the President Fox of Mexico?
Yes.
And qué dice de señor Fox?
Está bien.
He's a good man.
Yeah.
You like him?
Yeah.
I don't. No, no me gusta el señor Fox. Pero usted le gusta?
Sí.
You like? See, but you like him? Okay.
Yeah.
Uh huh. Oh, that's good.
Quiero una no sé.
What songs?
Yeah.
What songs does he have or do we have?
You.
Oh, I can sing a couple of old Phil Oakes tunes, but I don't know if I'd remember all the words, you know. Actually, we have a song we're going to play shortly by Carol Denny, one of our favorite, La Canción Cantada, ¿cómo se dice? Buena canción, my goodness, I don't know how to say it, but she sings very well, canta muy bien, y muy hermosa con las canciones. ¿Quiere oírla?
Yeah.
Entonces, gracias, señor, para su llamado.
Okay, gracias.
Thank you for your call.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.
And that was Ernesto. Who's one of our only regular Spanish language caller. Gracias, Ernesto, para su llamada. Thank you for your call. I hope I can, as you know, I stumble along in Spanish miserably, but nonetheless.
Better than me.
Better than I might be. And let's see here. Do I actually have Carol Denny? Yes, I do. I'm going to play you a song that you probably have heard before if you've been listening to this show, but it seems a little appropriate. It's called I'm a UC Cop.
When it comes to People's Park and Food Not Bombs, forget it. I'm a UC cop. 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 Oh, and the law means nothing to me. I volunteer for demonstrations every time they happen. UC makes it clear to me it's time for batting practice. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. 'Cause I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. And the law means nothing to me. Well, murderers and rapists on the street are fine with me. It's these hippies from the 60s that we can't allow running free. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop.
And that one was for Eleanor and Robert, who love, or at least Eleanor does, Carol Denny music. Finishing up this Food Now Bombs story, we're talking about how the benches were removed from the UN Plaza in San Francisco on April 28th. And it had been revealed that was a long-term plan of Mayor Whitewash Willie Brown in callous and cynical regard of the valid needs and reasonable accommodations for disabled and senior citizens, homeless or not. Food Now Bombers at risk of arrest relocated the serving across Market Street from the plaza, regrouped, then decided collectively to return to their regular serving spot in the plaza. Two cops on bikes advised Food Now Bombers that they were in violation of a court order. That's the same court order I was jailed for 6 years ago. And would be arrested if they did not stop serving. They did not stop serving, and the cops called it in. Lieutenant McDonough, SFPD, arrived shortly with a court order in hand and simply pointed and arbitrarily said, "You're arrested," to Food Now Bombs servers and organizers present. Soon after, there were at least 8 police cars, a police van, and 6 more bicycle cops. A total of 4 Food Now Bombers were cited, 2 were cited and released, and 2 were taken into custody for lack of proper identification. Details will follow. Action needed. Food Now Bombs needs our support. And here's the... I just got this report, so I've not caught up with it, but there was a scheduled serving Wednesday, May 9th. That was yesterday at 5:30. It said, be there, bring a camera, bring a recorder, bring a few friends, take notes, name, badge, and vehicle numbers. Be creative. I'm going to try to get that report for our next Sunday show. The show returns Sunday from 11 to 1:30 in the afternoon. And we have still with us, hanging in there, Jen Curry. Hey, Jen.
Hey. Okay.
So you're about to, you've had just about enough of all this nonsense, haven't you? Let's admit it.
Oh, my situation has exhausted me enough, and it's hard to hear piles and piles and piles of it. It's true, but it's looking like a nice sunset warming up. So there's that.
Oh, yeah.
So there were approximately 40 people standing around by the time I was put into the police car, and I'm just hoping that any of those 40 people, but hey, it'd be great if all 40 people called in and left a message either on the voicemail or called in live here. And before you hang up the phone, make sure you leave a name and phone number for Robert here. And let's see, where's the phone number? I have the phone number here. Okay. So if you could call either on the air while Robert's here, at
3772, folks.
Oh, I'm sorry, 3772. I don't know why mine says that, but
yeah, actually, some of those things are not accurate.
I have a misprinted.
We try
one.
To confuse people as much as possible because the station is, as you know, we are unlicensed. We are a micropower station, and we are completely secret. Nobody knows, has any idea where the station is located.
I don't even know where it is. I don't
know
how I got here.
We are, and we walk up the stairs with our eyes closed and our mouths
gagged.
This
is not true. Stop it. Okay.
Incoming call. Perhaps this is one of your witnesses.
Okay, but off the air, please leave a message at 423-4833. Make sure your phone number is clear. Thank you.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Oh, I know where the station is.
Well, don't tell her. You'll be blackballed forever. You might even get kicked off the air if you told Merlin.
I'm not going to tell.
Okay, well, that's good.
So listen, I just tuned in. What's the show about tonight? How much have I missed?
You missed the whole thing. You missed the fine, upstanding, speak-out and kick-ass comments of Jen Curry, who is finally packing up to hit the streets and head for the sunset and...
Hit the West Cliff.
And hit the West Cliff. Maybe she'll run into the Rock Man down there.
Oh, yeah. Whatever that guy... balancing the rock.
Rockman is a guy who does these rock sculptures. That are,
oh, yeah, those are cool.
Yeah, they are.
So I missed all the concert ticket giveaways and all the fine music this evening?
There weren't any. Sorry.
There were no concert tickets at this time, and such commercial activities are frowned upon by our Free Radio Santa Cruz censors.
Hey, were you at the corner of Cathcart and Pacific on Friday, January 19th, 2001?
Merlin, were you at the corner?
Cathcart, where is that?
That's downtown on Pacific Avenue.
Oh, Cathcart, that's the street that Chinese restaurant's on, isn't it?
Yes,
shop
that's correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what day was this?
Friday, January 19th at about 1 in the afternoon.
You caught that?
I might be because I got a friend that has an office right
there. Did you see some woman being torn off her bike by some surly-looking police officer?
Oh, no.
That's too bad.
Right. Well, you're lying. I can tell that right now.
Hey, you're tying up the phone line. People who saw me get arrested. I'm just
kidding. I'm tying up the phone line. I just called to say hi.
I'm just kidding.
Hey, thank you for calling in, Merlin. It's good to hear you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sorry.
And the phone lines once more open to all you regular or irregular listeners.
How many inbound lines are there?
There's only one.
Oh, does it have call waiting?
We don't even have call waiting, no.
Try back.
427-3772 is the number to call. 427-3772. While you're waiting, however, I'll tell you all the good news about the drug war. You probably heard about this one already. The Waters nomination for the Office of Director of the U.S. Office of National Drug Control, that is the Drug Czar. There are some folks rather alarmed about this guy, suggesting that you contact your senators and ask them to vote no on this nomination. John Waters holds views on drug policy that verge on the fanatical, according to this writer. Perhaps most disturbingly, Waters has enthusiastically praised the Peruvian military's practice of shooting down aircraft suspected of being used by drug traffickers. Last month, two American missionaries were killed in such a shoot-down, inevitable casualties of an extraordinarily reckless and immoral practice that violates international law. In 1996, Walters testified before Congress in opposition to the Sentencing Commission's recommendation to lower federal crack cocaine penalties to the same level as powder cocaine. Walters has dismissed the problem of racial bias in drug enforcement as an, quote, urban myth, unquote, despite overwhelming evidence that such a bias is rampant. For example, African Americans make up only 13% of the nation's drug users, yet account for more than 70% of drug incarcerations. That proves, of course, that they're darn criminals, man. We know that. His recommendation on cocaine penalties was made despite a consensus among serious observers of criminal justice that powder cocaine enforcement is also carried out in a racially discriminatory fashion. As deputy director of the ONDCP, which is, again, the U.S. Office of National Drug Control, of course, they're not controlling the dangerous drugs, alcohol and tobacco, which actually kill people each year in huge numbers. I think it's alcohol kills 300,000, tobacco kills 450,000. Walters favored incarceration over drug treatment and education. He has lobbied Congress for stiffer penalties for nonviolent drug offenders and opposed state laws exempting medical marijuana users from criminal penalties. In 1996, Walters co-authored a paper entitled The Clinton Administration's Continuing Retreat in the War on Drugs. In truth, however, the Clinton administration escalated the drug war, imprisoning more people for drug offenses than during the preceding Reagan and Bush administrations combined. To characterize the harsh Clinton drug war record as a retreat is to elevate partisan politics over truthful discussion and to show a deep disrespect to the American people on an issue of the greatest importance. In short, the Walters drug record is one of propaganda, extremism, and disregard for issues of racial equality. John Walters is unfit to lead the nation on drug policy, so you can just bet he's going to be nominated and ratified. He should be rejected by the U.S. Congress. Whether we can defeat his nomination or not, raising our voices in protest now will put pressure on the administration to moderate its drug policies. The Walters nomination has been criticized by mainstream news outlets such as the New York Times and The Economist, even by conservative flagship magazine National Review. And it gives you a website, http://www.stopthedrugwar.org/Walters/. To access this and other information, to send a message to the Senate against this retrograde nomination, and please call or fax your two U.S. senators and urge them to vote against the confirmation of John Walters as director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Again, www.stopthedrugwar.org is the place to go if you don't want to call long distance. And here's a little story from New York City. City Clothing Bank manager charged in fraud. Top official at the City Clothing Bank, which distributes apparel to the needy and homeless, was arrested yesterday for taking cash payoffs from an undercover investigator who said he wanted to divert $9,000 worth of donated clothes and merchandise to bogus charities, officials said. An inquiry began last July when the city's Department of Investigation received a tip that Philip E. Scheel, 44, the distribution manager at the clothing bank's warehouse at the old Brooklyn Navy Yard, was selling garments to non-charities for resale and keeping the money. Mr. Scheel allegedly solicited a total of $300 from an agent over several occasions and helped the agent fill out paperwork and create fake charities. This defendant was supposed to help clothe New York City's poor and homeless, said Edward J. Kuryansky, commissioner of the Department of Investigation. Instead, he took the clothes off their backs and put money in his own pocket. If they could only make Mayor Giuliani get him a similar charge, how happy we would be. Mr. Scheel of Dean Street in Brooklyn was a full-time employee at the clothing bank since 1998, earning $25,000 a year. Boy, are they going after the small fish or what? Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. We're losing Jen Curry. So if you want to hear the joy in her voice as you call in to say, yes, I saw this incident, if you did,
oh, thank God.
You're missing your opportunity, and it's time to do it. If you don't,
well,
catch us now.
I don't care if they call while the radio is live. What matters is I have no idea who any of these 40-some people were.
Well, here perhaps is one
who
of them.
Who supposedly saw what was going on or took pictures or recorded it.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Yeah, hi. I've been listening the whole show, and but I wasn't there.
We're talking to Judy, are we not? Judith, your cover is blown.
Well, you were there?
I want to make everybody know that they can call Huff, right?
Yes.
That's going to be your name is?
Jen?
Jen, I know, I've been listening the whole time.
Oh, you mean 423-4833?
So you're giving out Robert's number for contact people so that people that are listening now can tell their friends that here. So that afterward they can know who to call. That's very important that you make that really clear, you guys.
Yeah.
And can I ask her, you don't have to answer this question, if it has anything to do with hurt your case, but were you molested by this guy when you got there? Can you say that?
Well, there was apparently a radio show and people described what they saw on the air, which is fine, but as far as my case goes, I need people who are capable of testifying in a court of law as witnesses to this event, what exactly they saw, and I'm not feeding anyone anything. And if people know what happened, that's great. And,
right.
And in order to protect my own credibility and the credibility of any witness who calls in as a result of my appearance on this radio show or is discovered
as
a result.
I know, I've been listening. I understand that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to risk it. So,
I just want to make sure that,
so for me, the bottom line is if somebody saw it, I hope they call in. If they know somebody
no matter what they think about Robert.
Regardless, I'm asking for help because I was arrested and I was hurt by this officer and
I've been hurt by officers before too, and I want to be one of your supports. I want to say you've got great spirit, you know, you're still hopeful, and
I became hopeful today, actually.
Well, good. I'm glad we're all on your
Robert
show.
Said he overheard me. He said, well, guess what, we had a radio show and people called in about you, and I was like, well, that's cool, that means somebody saw it and we know how to get hold of him. But we don't, I guess we don't necessarily know how to get a hold of these people still. Maybe one of the phone numbers was a hotel and whatever, but there are people who work down there, and there's people.
Why don't we have a rally, post some flyers, I mean, do something. I'll give you my number at Huff or something. I'll give Robert Huff.
Right, you know, Judith, I'd like to talk to you about some other matters. For example, you were going to talk about Mercy Charities, which I think
is... Yeah, I made a presentation at City Council meeting.
Right, before you do, let me say goodbye to Jen. Say goodbye to you.
Yeah, I don't want to miss the sunset.
No, it's really awesome. And
yeah,
I hope
looks
I
nice today.
Okay.
Alrighty, thank
All right.
you.
Keep it up.
All right. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks.
So, Judith, you have actually, we've spoken about this a couple of times, but you've never had quite the opportunity to talk about the El Centro deal.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm still trying to piece it together. I made a bunch of phone calls Monday, but then I talked to... I talked to some city clerk's office. So Tuesday night there was a city council meeting. They call it the redevelopment agency meeting, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Interestingly enough, between 5 and 6.
Uh-huh.
And
Mercy Charities, of course, was rolling down the pike acquiring funds for another...
They managed to just, sign this lease without any public comment. They put on a sham meeting. I'm talking about Mercy Housing at El Centro.
Right.
They had this sham,
Now, did the El Centro issue...
I came in on the whole story about a week...
Judith, hang on for just a second. Now, the Tuesday City Council meeting, did that discuss El Centro, or are we talking about one a couple weeks ago?
because I know at the Tuesday council meeting, I knew it was on the agenda. It was another Mercy Charities housing scam, which has to do with the Beach Flats project.
Yes.
But I didn't know if they were actually pressing forward. Did the El Centro one also come up on Tuesday?
No. Basically, we just knew that that's when they were supposedly making the deal to sign to lease the land to Mercy Housing so they can build a senior housing project over on Galt Street. And it's great. We're not against that. It's just
but they hadn't informed they haven't informed the El Centro people who are going to be moved
over
there.
Yeah, they all know about that. There was a meeting about that. That isn't even what the complaint was.
Understanding was that they hadn't informed them, that they didn't know anything about it until it was almost a done deal, and then they got rather upset about it. But
exactly. I mean, see, I came in a week late. I have a friend there, but I didn't find out about what happened until a week later. So that's why I want to piece it all together from what happened about a month ago when I guess all the seniors got heard word of, you know, that there was going to be transitional housing was going to be approved, and that's still a deal. Uh-huh. They're talking. Do you know about that?
They're talking
about maybe using one of the floors. I think there's 48 units in the place. There's four. There's different wings. There's non-smoking with different wings.
Are you talking about people going from El Centro, which is a complex downtown which seniors use, actually right near where Jen Curry was, was seized by Officer
50
Baker. And you actually, as I said, they're planning to move these folks into this other project.
No, they're not planning to move anybody. I attended the meeting. Well, we'll see. The time will tell.
Right.
Right now, the building is supposed to be done in 2004, I believe. 2004.
Uh-huh.
And they still don't have HUD financing. What they're trying to do, well, they'll probably get, they don't have HUD approval until October. Because I went to this meeting and I took notes.
Uh-huh.
A tape recorder. The meeting was
well,
okay.
Is this okay?
We had a meeting for the seniors to assure them all that they weren't going to kick anybody out. Nobody was ever going to be evicted.
Mercy is always assuring people
this
of that.
This was Steve Farmer himself.
Oh, yeah. He's the Fuhrer there.
12 different Mercy buildings, at least I know. We've seen San Francisco, Tenderloin District, and everywhere.
I'm a little...
I'm always a little
wary of these assurances that Mercy isn't going to kick anybody out, particularly, for example, with the Dolphin Lee, because when you ask City Council to put those in writing, Mercy suddenly, it just doesn't happen, and that
what in writing?
That they're not going to kick anybody out.
Yeah, see, that's why we have to, I don't know anything about, I just heard a little bit about that. But anyway, this is about the management,
Take a deep breath.
I know.
Take a deep breath.
So I came in on it a week late, and I went to this meeting with my friend.
And we're talking here about, the El Centro residents moving
right.
to this Galt Street place when it gets built on 2004, right?
So we arrived on schedule. We're a little
PR person for Mercy Charities.
He was there when Pierre and I did our little presentation the other day. Oh, my God. And actually, I was thanked by a woman who didn't even know me afterwards that I did that. And there was also a woman that spoke up and said, she's been treated like a queen at El Centro. This is in regards to Pierre being totally ignored about a letter that he wrote with complaint and documentation of harassment, abuse, threat of eviction over icing that got off of a cake. I mean, this is so bizarre, it's hard to calm down.
Well, hang on a second now.
You know?
Pierre lives in El Centro?
Yeah.
So El Centro is currently managed by Mercy Charities?
Yes.
So
it's under the management of Steve Farmer and...
He had a problem with the management of Mercy Charities that they were ignoring.
Well, he ignored this letter, and so Pierre finally wrote a letter to the city council, which I could read to you probably. But
Why don't you read that?
I don't know. Maybe we should get out there. Maybe someone that was at the accident scene thought we could go
out
there.
Well, don't worry. There'll be time for that.
So he wrote a letter, finally. I mentioned it.
Do you have that letter with you?
Yeah, I do.
Well, hey, I encourage you to read it.
Well, which one? Okay, well.
The one he wrote to the city council.
Well, he wrote two.
Okay, well, choose one you think that covers the situation.
Okay, well... This is written on April 24th.
Okay.
To each member of the Santa Cruz City Council. In 1999, I joined some 49 other seniors living in El Centro, a place specifically designed for housing single senior citizens, approved of by the state and county and city of Santa Cruz. And now we learn that this city council is forcing the Mercy Housing people to evict the rent-paying seniors now living their final years at El Centro. We were assured by Mercy, told not to worry at a meeting last week. We were assured that no more than 8 residences at a time would be taken from the seniors and turned over to other youth by stronger people. Many of us are too old to psychologically and physically survive very long after another traumatic moving experience. Animal abuse, child abuse, woman abuse, racial abuse are all considered as criminal behavior, and now senior abuse is being contemplated by the current Santa Cruz City Council. While we all do need housing, stealing the old man's bundle, his apartment, and his dignity is not the way to do it. Tom Brokaw claims we are America's greatest generation. And then he wrote a poem.
How does that poem go?
Yeah. Sanctuary. Please remember us and honor us and not evict us on the eve of our death. Amen. Okay, now that's very personal. I hope he doesn't mind that I did that. Because actually what he did was he walked it down to city council. See, they had a meeting 2 weeks ago, after April 24th, the day he wrote it, that day. They had a meeting between 3 and 5. He got it mixed up, and he went down there at 5, and everybody was gone, and he ran into, of all people, the mayor.
Mm-hmm. Mayor so Tim Fitzmaurice.
Yes, and they had a nice conversation, mm-hmm. and it was very wonderful, and he was very... So he gave all the copies to the mayor. The mayor promised he would give copies of that to all the city council members, which I indeed believe he did. Now, Pierre received one phone call from one city council member. You guys tell me, I'm sorry, remember, it's not Scott, and it's not... Gibson,
Porter.
Porter. Yeah, Ed Porter called him, mm-hmm. and that was it. No one else even acknowledged that they'd received this letter from this old man who's wondering if he's going to get evicted. Now, when I read that letter, it makes some statements that are not necessarily true. They're not being evicted. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make that clear to anybody who just tuned in. There's nobody being evicted. I'm not saying that. Mm-hmm. This is a letter that a man wrote in fear of being evicted, mm-hmm. Wondering what's going on. So the mayor assured him.
Mm-hmm. The mayor
this
assured
this would not happen.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever. I think, the mayor didn't call him. I'm not sure. But do you want me to read what I read Tuesday night?
Sure, please do.
Okay, so the deal was already done deal, I guess. I know from the meeting that I attended to with Pierre, that basically what they did was, the first thing that they did was they passed, after they assured everyone, well, they got Pierre to come to the meeting. We went, because the letter that they gave everyone there from Mercy, it seemed to indicate, now this is where I have to put my facts there together, that the people that were there now could possibly qualify for HUD. And if you came to this meeting, you could find out about that. In other words, maybe he could pay even cheaper rent and have a little more money to do the things he needs to do. You know, he's a brilliant man. There's a lot of brilliant, wonderful people there.
Well, the real question, see, Judith, to me, is whether Mercy plays fast and loose with its semantics when they say, oh, no one's going to be evicted. But what they do is they will remove people from one project, and then you're not sure if you're going to get into the next one. They will assure you to death you will, but you won't get any guarantees. That's what the Dolphin Lee people never got, don't have, and aren't likely to get. Instead, you are told you are first preference. You have our first priority. But that's different than being guaranteed a space. And we've already seen one couple that have sued Mercy Charities when they did that in a trailer project over in the Soquel area, and they lost their housing. And so it's I haven't been following the El Centro case carefully. I can't say whether Mercy hasn't improved its tactics.
The couple lost the case. They lost their housing. And
yes, they did.
How did they lose their case?
They lost their case because the judge ruled, even though Mercy had falsely told them that they had. That they were going to be get into the housing, and that they had first preference, that there was no recourse that the couple had, that there was, in essence, no binding contract. And that's why I recommended that the Dolphin Lee tenants get those binding contracts before the project goes forward. And that's why SCAN, a year ago, passed a resolution much opposed by the old-time Elizabeth Vogel, Bernice Belton, Nora Hockman, pro-Mercy Charities types who want to just give it all to Mercy Charities, that said no progress on this housing business, the so-called affordable housing project, until there are real guarantees that the people who are now losing their housing will actually get into the new housing. And there still are no...
They just ran this through.
Yeah,
they conned everybody. I didn't have a tape. I was a witness to them telling that they wouldn't evict anyone.
No,
they got everyone to come to this meeting.
You're talking about the El Centro again.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
I mean, that's the only thing I know right now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But... This other case, I mean, did they just tell them by word and nobody got it in writing? Is that what you're saying?
Well,
they took it to court,
right.
All they had was their word?
Well, we're talking about the trailer case, which actually was taken by attorney Ed Fry, who's talked about it on the air.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, they were told, I think they were told that was the case. They believed them, and then they provided for them an alternate trailer for a period of time, but then suddenly they said, get out of the trailer, but they didn't put them into the new housing, and they were screwed. And they don't have the housing that they were, as I understand it, that they were supposed to get. So I want to thank you for calling in, and I want to get more details on this when you get the facts clear and lined up. And when I get the facts clear, I'm sorry, I don't have a clearer understanding of this. I should have. Is there anything more you want to... Do you want to say what you saw on...
Well, I could read a little bit more of what I read the other night.
Okay, why don't you do that?
Okay, because this is what we said.
This is about the El Centro.
Well, it refers to Steve Farmer. We already know who he is, right?
Right,
he's
the management side of Mercy Charities and Mercy Housing.
This is the real aspect of it.
Okay.
My dear Mayor Fitzmaurice, and it's the whole city council. Mm-hmm. This is a disagreeable letter that I have to write. that it is a matter of civil and civic duty. It's dated Tuesday, March, May 8th. On March 27th, I delivered by hand a letter with four supporting documents to Steve Farmer, prominently entitled, In Regard, Alleged Senior Abuse at El Centro, at Mercy Housing. So he brought it to his office. The four documents had been written and circulated over a period of 1 year by a Mercy Housing employee at El Centro named, I think I'll leave her name out right now.
Okay.
Okay. Perhaps Mr., or should I say it? No. Perhaps, it doesn't matter right now, does it?
Whatever you'd like.
Perhaps Mr. Farmer is still framing a reply to my allegations of continuous harassment, of threats of future eviction, of interference with my right to privacy and enjoyment of my rented domicile, of causing stress, of slander, and defamation of character against me made by a member of his staff. And I want to say I'm a witness to this, and they are documented. This is the last part I want to read. In big, black, bold letters, and he has it outlined, I respectfully ask that the city withhold signing any lease or giving any city tax money to Mercy Housing until this complaint is properly heard and resolved.
Mm-hmm.
That's the meat of it.
What you really need to do is get some kind of court action. But, yeah, I mean, I think Mercy Charities has had a free ride for far too long. It's been this monopoly provider that is always the person they turn to without considering any other organizations. And essentially, they're rubber stamped right and left. Whatever they want, they get. It's just amazing.
Well, thanks for doing the show. And,
hey.
You know, there's a Mumia rally. The million Mumia's case is really going forward now.
Saturday, May 12th, San Francisco,
And there's going to be a carpool at the town clock at 8 o'clock Saturday morning. I don't know if I'll be making it because I make a different direction. But should I give out the Mumia number?
All right.
If people want to, there's some...
Go ahead, give the number, but I got to get off the line here.
Okay, well, people can look it up. It's 425-4467. There's going to be a big rally in San Francisco, and there's carpool going at town clock at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock on Saturday.
Yeah, 425-4467.
Okay.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
And we are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, or I hope you are anyway. I'm speaking on it. You're listening to it. We were hoping for a call from activist James Costner, currently being held inside the San Jose County Jail, or is it the Santa Clara County Jail? I think that's it. Again, for the crime of demolishing a Columbus statue. He goes back to court, I believe, on the 16th, and I may be able to get some information on that before the end of the show. His action around the smashing the statue is not what I would have done. I think it was precipitous and somewhat lone wolf, but I don't like to see anybody being hauled to jail for, I guess it's 7 or 8 years. They're talking about putting this man in jail for essentially smashing the statue of a major war criminal. That is to say, someone who committed a war of genocide against the indigenous peoples of Hispaniola.
Call may be monitored or recorded.
Uh-huh.
You have a collect call from...
Yep.
An inmate at Santa Clara Department of Corrections, downtown facility. The cost for this call is
$2.83
for the first minute and
$0.12 for each additional minute.
If you consent to this call being recorded and accept the charges, press 0. Thank you for using
Pacific Bell.
Go ahead with your call.
Hey, Jim.
Hello, Robert.
You're on the air on...
Any attempt to place a three-way call or respond to call waiting will result in this call being terminated without warning.
Thank you for taking the call, Robert.
Hey,
Free Radio.
You're live on Free Radio, Jim.
Can you talk a little louder, Robert?
You're live on Free Radio.
How did the program on Tuesday night go?
You're referring to the film forum, and that went very well. We actually had about 20 people came and watched the film To Serve and Protect and looked into the issue of the sleeping van and a possible tent city. I'm glad you brought it up. We haven't talked about it on the air. There will be another program Thursday, a week from today, at 7:30 in the Porter, I think it's the Fireside Room up on campus, Fireside Lounge on Porter College. That is the plan at the moment. And we're going to be playing another video, I believe, Campground, the video we weren't able to play, and possibly some more stuff, again with the idea of encouraging people to draft an activist response to the city's failure to address the criminalization of the poor, and specifically the sleeping ban, which is $54 fines for doing whatever each of us has to do after 11 o'clock at night, sleep.
Being poor.
For being poor, right.
Santa Cruz, a solution to poverty. Santa Cruz City Council and the Downtown Business Association Solutions Department.
Well, you're in the middle of your own situation there, Jim. You're in jail awaiting, a hearing on the 16th?
Yeah, I am. There's a bail reduction hearing on the 16th at 1:30 p.m. at the Santa Cruz County Court building on the first heading in front of one of the judges that they keep changing on me, so it's hard to say who it is, in which we hope we seek to get the bail reduced, but I can get back out. As some people know that I was bailed out already. I'm being allegedly charged with smashing the Christopher Columbus statue in Sonoma City Hall, which I admit to doing. However, I did not admit to guilty for it because I don't see that as a crime. Unfortunately, the system does, and the system is threatening me with 8 years in jail, or 8 years in the penitentiary for this so-called crime. And I was bailed out on $2,000 after the people came to a bail reduction hearing and caused the system to act differently towards me. And then the system decided when there was no people in the courtroom to raise my bail to a 70G. So thus I'm back in jail. I'm staying going. This will be my, actually this makes the third and a half week that I've been in jail since this incident. And I was wondering, Robert, I wrote about a 5-minute statement. If I was wondering if I could read it.
Please, go ahead.
This is kind of a synopsis a little bit about who I am. A couple of students came to visit me from San Jose, and some of the students are being very supportive, and they said that there's some people out there who wonder, well, why would someone do that, and just basically skepticism and reservations about supporting me because they don't know who I am, they don't know me personally, and they see that as a very, out there kind of thing to do, and they want to know, what's the person saying, what kind of person would do such a thing, And I guess I wanted to, I wrote the statement of the day kind of a little bit about my life and what participation, and I'd really appreciate it if I could read it. So it says, 5-8-2001, 4:30 a.m., Santa Clara County Main Jail, otherwise known as the Cage. It is time to express my heart on a personal level about my particular participation in the movements of the past and present inside this, the deep of all deep. First of all, I am a freedom fighter who seeks nothing more than life to be liberated from the oppression and the chains that hold humanity in bondage. I want all life to be free, and I am prepared to die for this goal. Over the last 8 years, I have given literally thousands of hours of my time building movement and engaging in struggle. I suppose my childhood beatings and terrorization was my initiation into the world of chaos and repression. When I was born, my mother was passing on, thus the state separated me from all my blood relations. My four biological sisters attempted to keep me in the family, yet the racist state intervened and placed me in hell with some weak and ignorant white people. This was the state's first attack against me, one of many, many attacks to come. My adopted sister was raped by my southern racist stepdad, who my ignorant adopted mother chose for a 7-year mate. He literally terrorized us for 7 years, in which the whole of the adopted family still lives in denial of, like so many Americans, living a day-to-day lie about this country and its profoundly evil leaders, this quote. He treated me, and they treated me, as property. I feel as if I was an object that they brought from the 99-cent store. In my opinion, they had more love, care, and concern for their dogs, cats, fish, and cars, and even their stuffed animals. The Americana sickness was complete. By the time I was 16, I wanted a total divorce from the whole of them, and as a man, I finally have it. When at 19 years of age, I was a crew leader for the CCC, the California Conservation Corps, stationed in Watsonville, California. One night, I came across Mohammed K. Gandhi's autobiography. He opened my eyes to God, to service, to humanity, to empathy, and so many other priceless concepts. When at 21, I read Malcolm X and fell in love with such courage, conviction, and commitment. Since then, I have discovered Christ, Buddha, Muhammad, Moses, and others, Marx, Lenin, Mao, Ho Chi Minh, Frantz Fanon, Kim Sun, Huey and the Panthers, Zico, Zapata, Villa, Che, Vidal, Lumumba, Asata, and so many others who I love and admire dearly. I knew that I had no choice. It was essential for me to become a revolutionary and to fight for our freedom, come what may. In my life of struggles, I have fought against the repression of poor people, against things like the sitting man and the sleeping bands of Santa Cruz. In 92, I fought against the occupation of Haiti by U.S. forces. We marched and protested the U.S.-led slaughter of Iraq and its people. The streets of Santa Cruz shook with hundreds of protesters and demonstrators. In 93 and 94, I, amongst many others, were arrested and placed in jail for TD against the sitting ban, which targeted homeless people. I began to develop oratory skills for public speaking. In 94 and 95, I was introduced to Mumia Abu-Jamal, Leonard Peltier, Refuse and Resist, RTP, the MOVE organization, the Hoover organization, and many other revolutionaries. We would meet weekly to study and plot. I sold their papers from door to door after work. I attended a national conference in Miami for Refuse and Resist and brought brought back my first Womia video, live from death row. The comrades and I began organizing teach-ins and video showings to support Womia, who in my opinion was dying and is dying in a cage due solely to his true sincere commitment to free humanity, and he was framed up. On June 1st, 95, Tom Ritz, the Pennsylvania governor, signed Jamal's death warrant, and we fought back hard all across the planet to save him. In 96, I and others established an active revolutionary coalition to continue the work. I believe we accomplished a great deal of educational work in 1 year's time. In 97, Bill Clinton signed public law threatening 3,000 and 8 native people in Big Mountain, Arizona, with forced relocation, and again we rose up to stop the injustice in months of hard work. I have taken breaks, but I have never quit. In the past 9 years of active struggle, I have fought for native rights, for people's rights, for POWs and political prisoners, against police brutality, for revolution and liberation, against the Iraqi slaughter, against the Yugoslav bombings, against Prop 187 and Prop 209, and many other causes. The State Department has fired me twice from good jobs that I love. The FBI has come to my house late at night to scare me. The CIA has followed me down the highway and let it be known. The racists have threatened me with death. The pigs have placed me 15-plus times in handcuffs. Movement leaders have betrayed me, yet I will not stop, and I feel as if I have really only begun.
Well, we're talking to Jim Costner, and this is the last 5 minutes of Bathrob Spears' Broadsides here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Jim, you're inside the Santa Clara County Jail, and you, what, you're in the general population, you're not in isolation, but it's still, it's no picnic, right?
It's far from a picnic. The guards took me out on Sunday from Chow Hall and made it very clear to me that they can brutalize you here if they feel like it. They made it very clear to me that they can pummel you and they can literally just physically brutalize, terrorize you, and they think that they can get away with it. And in many cases, they can.
What happened to you on that occasion with these guards?
Well, when I walked into Chow Hall on Sunday, everybody was standing up, which is usually the direct opposite of what goes down. Everyone's usually sitting down. So I asked one of the guards who was closest to me when I entered Chow Hall what was up with the situation, in which he responded to me, "You have an attitude problem in a very cruel and wicked way, a very aggressive way," in which I expressed to him, I said very calmly, "My attitude problem will never compare to yours." And in which case he said, "I could break your face." At which point I responded, "I'll get my face broken for asking you a question." At that point, three guards grabbed me physically, pulled me out of the chow hall, threw me against the ground in a little teeny cage, and expressed to me that they said that they did hardly nothing to me, and they could do much, much more if they so desired and wanted to.
And since that time, have you been subject to any other penalties? I know Steve Argue, when he was in jail, had his... He went on a blanket strike and he had some problems. You supported him from outside when he was having his difficulties in Santa Cruz County Jail.
We made sure that Steve Argue would never get beat up again in jail when he got beat up, and we were successful in that. They never touched him again.
Have any of your fellow prisoners expressed any solidarity with you on this issue, or you become a...
There's many people who express different levels of solidarity. But nobody in here disagrees that the police are running amok in America. Nobody in here disagrees that racism is going on. Nobody, except for maybe the White Power Boys. Nobody in here disagrees that the conditions in jail are vile and revolting. It's a day-to-day psychological torture that a human being must basically be spiritually and emotionally strong and sound to be able to get through it.
Now, we only have about a minute or two left. Would you like to put out any other message to the folks out here in Free Radio's audience?
Just that I think freedom of speech is vitally important to the movement. Free Radio allows people to, for the most part, allows people to have freedom of speech, and that's very significant to the liberation struggle. And freedom of speech cannot be taken away. If we let freedom of speech be taken away, then we're letting the movement be killed. That's one point. Another point is that this Saturday there's going to be a huge demonstration. Thousands will be in the street up in Frisco for Mobian Bujamal, and we just wanted people know about it. So on it out again, encourage people to go up there. I believe it starts at 11 o'clock at Dolores Park in Frisco this Saturday, May 12th. That's to commemorate the Move bombing and those people who already know, and maybe some who don't know, on May 13th, 1985, the Philadelphia Police Department has the jurisdiction of the white supremacist American government dropped the bomb on their house, and they destroyed 11 revolutionaries and burned down 61 homes. This demonstration is to commemorate that bombing, as to support the Move organization, and for me, it supports the Move organization, as well as to support, first and foremost, to support Mumia Abu-Jamal, one of our greatest revolutionary freedom fighters in this country today, who has been wrongfully convicted of killing a cop in place of death row, in which they tried to execute twice now, in which, or actually three times, one time illegally on the streets and two times legally through their system, in which they've been prevented all three times, and that's because of the people. So I encourage people to go up to that. Also, on May 26th, there'll be a Rage Against Racism There'll be a lot of wonderful people. Yuri Kuchiyama's comrade, Malcolm X, will be there. She actually held Malcolm X's head. She was assassinated. She'll be there speaking out May 26th, raising against racism. That starts at 11 o'clock at First and Henning. That's right in front of the main jail in downtown San Jose. Curly Raulis, but a man who's a soldier in the Black Liberation Army in a border, a former political prisoner 7 years. Also, Gerald Sanders, a former Panther from the East Coast, will be there. Also, a native brother by the name of Vic Yellowhawk, who people might have saw when they came down to the program we had in Santa Cruz a couple weeks ago at the basement of the Vet Hall. A very beautiful native brother who's going to be coming down and doing the opening ceremony. There'll also be the Students for Justice will be there. Western Greece, the United French Free Political Prisons will be there. The EUPLO, the United Earth and People's Liberation Organization will be there. There'll be a lot of different, hopefully there'll be a little bit of hundreds. So that's on May 26th, that's true, May 26th. I encourage people to come out to that. And for myself, just the two comments is that anybody who supports me and supports what I did or doesn't support me but yet supports what I did or however you want to express it, people are entitled to obviously their own opinions about all the different things that are going on. I would encourage people that right now we're trying to get myself bailed out so that, as Steve argued, that I have half a chance to keep myself from being railroaded. If they keep me in here, I will be railroaded most assuredly. So the point is to get me out. They've already violated their own bail policies by upping my bail to 70 G's and then lying about it. And these people are saying that I didn't show up when, in fact, I did show up and they changed. The DA came in.
You got about 1 minute, Jim.
Okay. Basically, anybody who's willing to amass, we're trying to get at least 100 people or as many people as we can to give $20 each. To my bail fund so that I can get out of here so that I can fight my case more accurately and more effectively. If people are willing to, they can call 588-2756 or I just woke up. What's the phone number? Well, that's a good enough. 588-2756. 588-2756. 831 area code. I'm asking everybody who supports what I did to give $20 so I can get the bail raise. Also, if anybody's willing to come over next Wednesday at 1:30 for the bail reduction hearing, that'll be very, very helpful because it was the people who basically forced the system here to view me differently and to treat me differently and to allow me to get out last time. The same truth is the truth today. Same truth for all movement struggles, and I just encourage people to come out. So thank you very much for letting me be on Free Radio.
Hey, thank you, Jim, and call us again.
Take care, Robert.
All right.
That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're over time. Uncle Dennis is next. Join us again Sunday, 11 to 1:30 on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Here's the sound of Carol Denny and the sound of Uncle Dennis. Unless you want to go directly into your theme song, Dennis.
Carol Denny's fine.
Carol Denny's good. If you want to contact Jim Costner, leave a message for him, please call HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Thanks for being with us. And any witnesses to the Jen Curry assault by Officer Sergeant Butchie Baker, or Sergeant McPhillips, I should say, both of those sergeants, give a call to 423-HUFF.
Certain as the sun will rise and politicians have lying eyes, as sure as suffering multiplies, the rich will never be poor. As certain as in life you learn, the rich have money and time to burn, the rich will counsel you, wait your turn, in heaven you'll get some more. As sure as poverty plagues the land, the rich will give you a helping hand, as soon as mountains return to sand and oceans leave the shore. Count on nothing in life so well, that if the rich go straight to hell, lots are something they buy and sell, they'll never enter the door. Clearly all that you need in life to be at peace in a world of strife, the company of a man or wife and lots of money in store. Life is simple and so complete, with faithful friends and some bread to eat, a solid roof and a room with heat and stocks and bonds galore. The rich will probably tell you nay, it's inner riches that really pay. The rich have always got lots to say as they watch their assets soar. Count on nothing in life so plain, the poor have water, the rich champagne. The market rises to this refrain, the rich will never be poor, the rich will never be poor. Sure as life is a strange affair in need of some
some robust repair. The rich don't actually have to care. The rich will never be poor. Maybe people are all the same, but the rich are playing a different game. You take your chances and take your aim, you'll never even the score. The rich can't help it if life's unfair. The richer people, they really care. They often mention it's hard to bear. They're burdened at their core. Some say no, but it's plain to see the rich are different than you and me. The rich are different as they can be. The rich will never be poor. The